thanks for choosing Felger and Maz to entertain.
My nickname is Gloom.
And inform you in the afternoon.
The people who like licorice really like licorice.
98.5, the Sports Hub.
We have Bruins news. We have Celtics fallout. We have injury updates on all the teams. We've got Bill Belichick at the Combine doing a stint. Bill Belichick spoke today, did an interview today. We'll play that sound and give you our thoughts. We even got some thoughts on the heavyweight division in boxing. A good night for boxing over the weekend, at least according to me. At least according to me, and that's all that matters at this second, because I'm the only one talking. So we'll get to all that stuff on a reentry Monday. We'll do it with your phones at 617-779-0985. You can load them up early and often on whatever you want. I do want to start, Maz. How about with the McAvoy injury? Why don't we start there?
Sure, absolutely.
Okay, so McAvoy goes out 37 seconds into his first shift against Montreal on Saturday night. They have no update after the game. They say we'll get back to you on Monday. Now here we are on Monday, and Cassie doesn't really offer much of an update other than Charlie's not playing tomorrow night, and he's going in for more tests. They have a team pitcher day on the ice in which their injured players go out. Well, everyone's out in skates in uniform on the stanchions, except Bergeron's not in, or he's sitting in a chair. Tuukka Rask is not in skates, and Charlie McAvoy is not in skates. He goes out in slippers, and he is spotted with a left knee brace on his knee. That's where it stands. Your thoughts?
I'm worried. I mean, I'm worried, and I'll tell you what worries me as much as anything about the McAvoy injury, and not just he's my whoopee, but I think he's obviously an important part of the whole Bruin turnaround, and what worries me about it is that it was basically non-contact. I mean, that's the part that worries me the most. You know, I know that, you know, at first people thought it was a slash, and then clearly there was, or I shouldn't say clearly, but everything I've seen in red says there was no actual contact made there.
Did you see him go into the boards before?
I did not, actually.
Okay, so this is so, I want to literally kill myself.
Oh, so I missed this.
Because I can't, I can't figure out technology and Twitter and all that stuff, so it can go F itself. But there's a clip, we played it on TV last night, analog, old-fashioned television. And I'm just yelling at myself at technology because I so can't stand it. It makes me want to just kill something. But there's a clip out there. They showed it on Ness, and it's on social media. Find it. We ran it on TV last night. Remember television where you turn on, you actually just watch the television? We showed it on television a bunch last night. It's out there. Charlie crashed into the boards right before he engaged Gallagher in the corner. It had nothing to do with the Gallagher exchange in the corner. Nothing. Gallagher, it looked like from one angle, Gallagher chopped down on his foot. He didn't. The stick landed right before the skate, and then Charlie tumbled over it, but that really had nothing to do with it because Charlie came off the boards with his right leg, looking like a dead fish, an absolute dead fish. And Vin, or who's ever at NBC's Boston today on the simulcast, maybe you can just get a freeze frame picture of the 18 times we ran it last night on TV. So it's there. It's out there. I just can't find it because I suck. Okay. Oh, God, it's so frustrating. So here it is. Thank you. Excellent. Old-fashioned TV can bring it up. So now you go back to the very first shot that you showed. It's up along the boards, and McAvoy goes into the boards, and boy, and this is why I want to see it again. I was almost positive it was his right leg.
So his right knee got pinned in there, it looks like.
His right leg crashes up against the boards, and he comes off the boards. If you see the clip, and it's everywhere. When he comes off the boards, his right leg is a dead fish. It's a wobbly dead fish. And so when I hear today, so there it is. That's his right knee up against the boards, right?
Mm-hmm.
See it?
Yeah.
Right knee. I'm not envisioning things.
No.
When I heard today that he's got a left knee brace, and I guess it could still be his left knee.
Well, I was going to say, it looks like it's bent kind of inward a little bit there. So, you know, it wouldn't surprise me, though, if it happened on that play.
That's where it happened, not with the Gallagher exchange with the stick.
Okay. So either way, I would tell you, though, it's not as if someone whacked him on the leg or anything of the like. It came either from, the you know, his knee bent the wrong way or he turned the wrong way or felt some sort of tweak in there.
When you see the video, and we'll post it on our social media when we find the clip. When you actually see the video, the way he comes off the board, his right leg is wobbly. It's a dead fish. And so, anyway, when I heard left knee brace, I said, oh, they're playing a game there because it's his right leg. It's his right, not his left. To me, it felt clear that it was his right, not his left that was hurt. And so when I heard left knee brace today, I said, well, they're doing that intense team pitcher day. Everyone's out there. So they're intentionally letting you think it's the left knee, but it's the right. And then I thought, oh, well, that's good news. That's good news because if it's an ACL, if it's season ending, there's no point in dinking around with anyone.
No, right. You wouldn't even put a brace on it.
You wouldn't even need to.
You just pull the plug and that's it.
And there's no need to try and pull a fast one on somebody, left versus right, because he's out for the year and he's not going to play, and so there's no need to play with the future opponents coming up in the playoffs.
I bet she's getting an MCL sprain.
My guess is he's got something in the right knee, and they went left brace today to throw everybody off because he's going to miss some time, but he'll be back for the playoffs. And that's just me fumbling around with videos and pictures and in my own head.
Well, yeah. For me, the news today, no cast, no crutches. I mean, I'm still concerned, but I'm not freaked out. I think he'll be back. You know, he'll probably be out in the next couple of weeks, and we'll have him back for the playoffs.
Yeah, honestly, I'd be willing to bet, and I want to see the video now that you mentioned it, but I'm willing to bet that they're playing it straight and that he's got an MCL sprain in his left knee.
And that was his left knee buckling there up against
the board? Yeah, just bending inward a little bit, and then, you know, it's also possible that he banged his right knee and then put more weight on his left leg, and his left leg kind of buckled a little.
Well, watch the video and let me know what you think. Overall, in terms of the importance of the injury, if it's just regular season, if an MCL is typically 2 to 4 weeks, and if it's 2 to 4 weeks, fine, no problem. Okay, he's back in 4 weeks. Playoffs start in 6. I've seen Charlie McAvoy step into the playoffs with no NHL experience and be the best player on the ice. That's fine. So then if it's just an MCL, 2 to 4 weeks, something like that, that's like Bergeron, get them both back with a week or two to go in the regular season, no problem. I'm okay. If he's out, if he's hurt, big bad news.
Of course.
Game-changing kind of news.
Yes. I mean, to me, I think the Bruins are at a stage now anyway where if you look at the balance of the season with the number of games they got to play and where they are in the standings, they should be resting guys anyway. They should be picking spots and starting to do what they did the other day or last week when they gave Heinen a night off and Grizzlick a night off and started playing Junta and moving guys in and out.
Which leads to my next Bruins thought. Tuukka Rask said to be nursing a day-to-day minor injury. You buying?
No.
Me neither.
No, because his play has been garbage. So I think that they look at him and they say, okay, here we go. This is, you know, he's starting to fade again. We got to recharge him. So you know what? We're going to give him a little blow and give him a little time off, because what we don't want to publicize and emphasize is the idea that he fades when the workload gets too great. Because he's sensitive to it. Other people are sensitive to it. And so, look, because again, I go back to the comment Cassidy made at the beginning of the season when he sort of almost backed off what he said about Tuukka and the workload. So I think they just saw a slip in his play. They think he's getting tired, and they're going to give him a little blow.
But
so,
just real quick, though, considering the history with groin and hamstring injuries with this guy over the last couple of years, why wouldn't you buy it? Like, he tweaked something, they're going to give him a few nights off.
Because I'm telling you why. I didn't see one thing from the Pittsburgh game. He started out slow but finished better. I didn't see one sort of tweak. That's one. And two, I think Maz is right. I think they're sensitive. If they say, Rask is slipping here a little bit, we want to set him straight, so we're going to play the other guy, how is that played? Oh, Tuukka's, you know, Tuukka's benched again, or Tuukka's sucking again, or he's choking, and it's the end of the year. You know, if they just tell it to us straight that we don't like the trend line of Tuukka, we're going to, you know, shut him down to set him, you know, get him straight, and the other guy's been good. If they just play it straight like that, we take it and go, oh, they're benching Rask again. Oh, just in time for the playoffs. Great. Good job, Tuukka. And we get on Tuukka. If it's a minor day-to-day thing, then it's an injury and, oh, he's just, you know, maintenance. He's just making sure he's 100%. That's what I think. And I don't, because it's just too coincidental that his play fades. We're at the end of the year. And now all of a sudden he's got a very, very minor injury that's dead. I don't buy it. I think they're looking at him saying we're going to shut him down and straighten him out.
I mean, to me, McAvoy and Bergeron are a real longer term. And I say longer term because I think it's going to be measured in weeks, not days. Rask, to me, is a fatigue thing. Again, they saw him slip.
McAvoy's the one. All right. So Bruins items. There they are. 617-779-0985. Celtics items. How'd you feel about the game Saturday night, Murray? I'll start with you.
Playoff feel. Extremely competitive. Loved watching it. But if it wasn't for that bench, they get blown out. Because I couldn't have been more disappointed with three key guys. One of which was Kyrie, who was, what, 6 of 17. Suck game for him. Jaylen Brown comes up small in another big game. Which before, you know, I always reference that Golden State game earlier in the year. Jaylen Brown, like, he raised his level that night. I was like, okay, he's up for these type of games. Now with this in the Cleveland game a couple of weeks ago, I mean, he did nothing. I think he had 9 points on Saturday. And then the Magician, who I'm now going to refer to Al Horford as the Magician again, because he disappeared. There he goes. Oh, break out the magic wand again, because he has been non-existent since the return from the All-Star break. And he was... Just he looked old and useless on both ends of the floor. One of those final possessions. I still don't understand what the hell he was trying to do. Call the timeout. Hold on to the ball so you can maybe get the jump ball. He rolls it to who? Whoever's nearest in a red jersey? Al Horford was putrid on Saturday night, so that was extremely disappointing.
I mean, Horford was bad. He was bad. And you know what? They were playing fine until he went back in the game in that fourth quarter, and then it turned. And so, to me, they got, you know, good performance. They even got a better game out of Baines than they did out of Horford, for crying out loud. And the little bit that Baines was out there, I thought he was effective. It felt like this is the kind of team that they can use a big-bodied center against, someone in the paint that can actually score down there. And this is where Horford's sort of, Horford's tweener-ness, if that's what you want to call it, or, you know, designation as a tweener. He doesn't really have a post game, and he's not quick enough to play on the outside, I think, hurt them in this game. This is a team, you got to be one or the other. You got to be down by the basket or making shots out of the perimeter. He didn't do either.
So frustrating loss. We can get on him for the way they turn the ball over at the end in Horford's night. And, could Stevens have called a timeout in there somewhere when it got too hectic and they were turning the ball over? Like, all those things are on the table. Happy to talk about them. But call me crazy. That night, overall, when I step back, speaks to how good you are and how fraudulent Houston is. I'm sorry. You should have won the game, okay? You gagged it at the end.
Totally.
Okay, so, I mean, you just flat-out gagged. But you walk in there, and you're toe-to-toe with them. You're toe-to-toe. You're you're just as good. And you're in Houston. They're fully reloaded. You know, you shouldn't win that game. And you basically, and meaning, you know, going into it, that's not your night. And you should have won that game.
I said on Friday I thought they were going to get blown out. I thought there was a good chance they could get blown out in that game.
To me, that game shows you how good you are and how fraudulent Houston is. Houston couldn't close you. It's Marcus Smart still almost ties the thing.
Yeah.
Because Houston can't inbounds the ball or make their free throws or figure out what to do at the end of the game. The Celtics still almost tied it.
I mean, Houston is vulnerable. I hate the style anyway. I can't stand that.
How many three-pointers did they have?
Oh, God, I don't even know. I never
checked.
I didn't look it up. That's all they do is shoot threes or layups and free throws. That's it. There's nothing in between. And the whole D'Antoni message of, like, you know, run and gun and play no D. It's entertaining. It's fun to watch. I just think it's hard to win that way because in the playoffs, sooner or later, you're going to have a game that you got to win 92-89, and they can't do it.
This is Felger and Mass on 98.5, the Sports Hub. Felger and Mass.
They're more scared of you than you are of them.
98.5, the Sports Hub. Sports Hub. Sports Hub. Sports Hub.
And now Nash will break it out over the line right side. Charlie McAvoy a little slow to get back to the bench as it's floated on the Canadian's net, covered by Antti Niemi.
Charlie McAvoy favoring his left leg as he really struggled to get to the bench, and they're taking him down towards the Bruins locker room. You know, when you see injuries like that, think about Steven Stamkos last year. You know, he went into the boards just awkwardly, and it wasn't much at all, and all of a sudden he's missing the rest of the season. I mean,
lower body, obviously didn't return. Tomorrow's a scheduled day off, so everyone will be off, and Monday when we get back to the rink, we'll have a better idea where he's at. So right now, that's all I got. Hopefully it's not serious. It didn't look serious at the time, but I don't really know. I have nothing new to report. He's getting evaluated this afternoon. Will not play tomorrow. And then we'll go from there.
Okay, we're going to jump right back into the phones. Maz, very good. That's exactly what we're doing. Ryan in Nashville, lead us off.
Hey, guys. Thanks for taking my call again. I just want to make two quick points on the Julian comments. And first of which, I think it's...
So Julian comments are what? No one knows what you're talking about. So after the game, Claude Julien called out Rick Nash for embellishing and saying it was embarrassing to the sport of hockey. Okay, so that's what he's referring to. Go ahead.
I believe it's because of Julien and his system that we never really got caught for embellishment, and that was just not part of it. So I agree with him that maybe the ref's eyes certainly missed it. And then two, he called out about the slashing, the Sean Corrali slashing. Just curious, you know, if there was a penalty shot that he gave that they got, does that actually affect the end of the game? Clearly affected the shot, never went in.
So let me just stop you. Here's Claude after the game whining about the officiating.
Well, I think it's pretty obvious. Your best shooter is on a breakaway, and he doesn't get a shot away. I think everybody agrees it should have been a penalty shot. You know, and what's embarrassing is Nash embellishing. It didn't, you know, the stick hits his shoulder, doesn't even hit his face, and he embellishes, looks at the referee. Those are embarrassing things in our game of hockey. You know, and we're a tired team, and we have to kill penalties, and eventually caught up to us. And, you know, that's disappointing that, you know, we had some of those things happen. Or another penalty that's called 5 seconds later because we end up on a two-on-one. You know, it's like, you know, as I said, we evaluate ourselves, and you expect others to evaluate themselves as well.
You have a thought, Miss?
Well, first of all, I think overall he's right. He comes off as whining, but I thought it should have been a penalty shot, and Nash clearly didn't get hit in the face.
Didn't take much time for him to turn into a Montreal Canadian whiner.
But he said the same kind of stuff when he was here about they discouraged it.
Okay, just the tone. I'm just telling about the tone. What a crybaby tone. He's 1,000% right about Nash. 1,000% right. And he's totally consistent. You're right, and Mez. When he was here, he consistently called out the Canadians and other teams for doing it. He would call out his own players. When Marchand would flop, or Chara, or someone would go down, Claude would say, I'd have to be consistent. We have to call it like we see it with our own team, like other teams, and that's not how we coach it. And so Claude has always been an anti-flopper. He's been an anti-embellishment guy. He always called out the Habs when he was the Bruins coach, and now he's doing it, just reverse roles. He's 1,000% right. Rick Nash, that was a weaselly, Canadian, cheating, greasy, just, I can't stand it. Claude's 1,000% right.
But
on the Rick Nash. But when you put it in context of his whole post-game comments, he sounds like a whiny little baby. It's not, you didn't lose because of the officiating, Claude. And I think he's right on all those calls. Should that one have been a penalty shot? I don't think so.
See, I say yes on that.
It's close. He was right about there was a late call where Montreal was off and away on a 2-on-1, and they called a trip that was really late, like 3-4 counts late, it felt like, that I think he has a gripe on as well. His team's 12 points out of the playoffs. They've sucked all year. That's not why you lost the game. But the thing about Nash embellishing, 100% right. 100% right. We've got Stephen Medford on the Celtics. Go ahead, Steve.
Hey, guys. How you doing?
Good. What do you got?
Yeah. So I just want to talk about, the Celtics and Rockets game. And overall, I thought the game was fantastic. It was a back-and-forth game. Both teams were on fire. So the game itself was really entertaining. But in terms of the Celtics, I still take a lot more positives than negatives out of the game, despite they lost, because the fact that you're able to hang with the Rockets on the road when Kyrie is that bad of a game and you're still able in a position to win. I mean, I thought Terry was great. I thought Greg Monroe played his best game at Celtics. So overall, I still take a lot more positives than negatives out of the game.
I know that's like that's a very green teamer thing for you to say, but I agree. I think it establishes who you are, which is right there with the second, third, fourth best team in the league. That's what you are.
I mean, to me, look, I think I said this in the email exchange. Like, there's a lot to pick at the end of that game. I thought they were going to get blown out, though. And if they can get anything close to what they got out of Morris and Monroe, because to me it's really about those two guys. I know what Rozier is. We all know what Rozier is. But those other two guys, if the matchup is right and Monroe can score in the paint like that and give them that kind of offense, if Morris is knocking down shots like he was, they'll be tough.
Jimmy Stewart, thoughts on Greg Monroe vis-a-vis Al Horford?
Monroe Saturday night had his best game as a Celtic, both offensively and defensively. And Al Horford has sucked probably since the All-Star break.
What is your
Al Horford looks really old right now, both on the offensive and defensive ends of the ball.
What is your prognostication on both players going forward?
They're going to rest Horford coming up, I think, or they're going to spot him in minutes. You're going to see more of Greg Monroe. They're going to try to feature him more and put a spotlight and see if he can help them play more of a Horford-like game. And, come the playoffs, I think everybody will be fresh and ready to go.
And so Horford will back to being the second-best player and a key factor on the team, and Monroe will be a scrub on the bench.
Scrub is a little strong, but yes.
Okay.
See, I think it's going to come
down. Hack is my word.
I think a lot of it's going to come down
Excuse
to...
Excuse me, hack.
To who... to who they're playing and what the matchup is. Because I think against a team like that, again, I think you saw it a little bit when Baines was in the game. They were able to get him the ball down low, and he was able to score. And on one of them, he got off this nice little left-handed jump hook, but the ball didn't go in, but it was still a good shot. And it rattled in and out. And so I looked at that, and I said, Houston can't defend the interior. They don't have a traditional big guy in there, unless you count Nene.
Capella.
Yeah, but he's 6'9", and he's thin. Like, I think if you get, if you get Monroe down there at 6'11", or Baines at 7 feet with his, body mass, Tommy's all excited about that.
You're not going to see this team. You're not going to see Houston again. They're going to get, Golden State is going to rub them out.
See, I just don't believe in, that run and gun thing that D'Antoni plays. I don't. Because I think the playoffs are different.
They're still a dumb team. Still a dumb team. Again, it's another thing we put on TV last night. But it was, did you see their final inbounds play? Okay, so once again, Houston has trouble inboundings the ball. Inbounding the ball. They can't inbound it, and they don't hit their free throws. So it's just like typical, glaring example of a team that doesn't get it. But they're having trouble getting the ball in. D'Antoni calls a full timeout I believe it's that full 2 minute timeout or whatever it is. And they come out and he's drawing it up. He's talking to all the players. He's got the whiteboard out and they come out. And they have six guys on the floor. It's like, what were you drawing? Did you draw six guys? Like, this isn't football where you've got 18 different formations and three different personnel groups. We're showing this on NBC Sports Boston now as well. This is coming out of a full timeout, 2 seconds left to win the game. And it's like, you got guys pointing all over. You just talked about this for 2 minutes.
And they still didn't have anyone open.
I think it was Tucker. They still missed their free throw. They still gave the Celtics a chance. Remember when they played the Warriors and they got in the same sort of spot? And it was like the last 2 minutes, it was routine for the Warriors. Inbound, free throw, inbound, free throw, inbound, foul, free throw. Just play the game out the way you're supposed to. And the Celtics never got a sniff. Now twice against the Rockets, twice. The Rockets have had them at the end of the game, and they get into this free throw, foul, inbound, sort of, you know, just that part of the game. And Houston can't hold up. They can't get the ball in. They can't hit their free throws. And the Celtics almost tie it. And I see that. I say, even if they go toe-to-toe with Golden State, I'm talking Houston, they'll screw it up at the end because that's who they are.
But they're not going to beat Golden State. No, they're not going to beat Golden State. I mean, I know this is becoming like a popular thing here in the last, you know, 48 hours over the weekend because of the way Houston's rolling now. But they're not. I'm not telling you they're smart at the end of the game. I think it has much to do as anything with the way they play. I don't think you can play that open and that loose in the playoffs. It's just that the league won't allow it.
What's the farthest a Mike D'Antoni team has ever gone? Has he ever made a conference final?
Yeah, I think one of those Suns teams did, didn't they? Back in the early aughts?
Let's look it up. Dave in Plymouth, quickly on Tuukka Rask. What do you think?
I think that he's begging to be shut down. And I think that, you know, as soon as Cassidy said he came into his office Saturday morning and said, oh, you know, I'm not sure. I go, that's it. That's it. You know, it's like we're going to go through this in March with him, that he's going to start picking games where he's not feeling well. I say play Hudobin. Play Hudobin for a majority. They're in a position, Mike, where they don't really need the points as much as other seasons. They're in a good spot. They got four games in hand on Toronto. They're okay. They can afford to rest these guys.
So I agree with everything you said other than that part about Saturday night, meaning Saturday when Tuukka walked in. I think they watched his game against Pittsburgh on Thursday night, whatever night that was, where he allows 3 goals on 7 shots to open up the game. In his last 5 games, I think his save percentage is .878, which, again, sucks in that league in this day and age. His last 5 games, his save percentage is .878. He allows 3 goals on 7 shots to open the game against Pittsburgh on Thursday, and they get out of that one, and I think they said, it's time to straighten him out. Shut him down. Get his head straight. Give him a rest. Give him a blow. Whatever. Goalie Bob, get with him. And Hudobin's been fine. Their position in the standings is fine. And this year, they have sort of that luxury to be proactive and to get to Tuukka. And so that's what I think's going on. I think he's fine physically.
And look, in that game on Saturday when it was one zip, Hudobin made a couple of big stops.
Awesome. It's terrific.
I mean, he did. He made some really big stops.
D'Antoni made 2 conference finals with the Suns.
He did.
Yep.
Yeah. How did they do?
They lost both times.
But like quickly?
4-1 and 4-2.
Yeah. His system sucks.
Here's Murray.
His system sucks and he sucks.
Murray's updating and we're right back.
Stay tuned for more Felger and Mass on 98.5 The Sports Hub.
Felger. I like anti-coupon.
And Mass.
Stupid. They're so stupid.
98.5 The Sports Hub.
Marcus Morris going to lob it into the front court. Smart. Catches. Turns. Falls away.
Oh.
And hit the front rim. It's no good, but the Celtics came within an inch of the most miraculous finish you would ever have heard. A Hail Mary to Marcus Smart. He was able to catch it at the three-point line in front of the Boston bench, turn and get a shot away that hit the front rim.
Wow. And I'm not sure if he didn't get fouled in that situation.
Which would have been 3 free throws. The Celtics and the Rockets have completed one of the most memorable regular season series we have ever seen. The Rockets win their 15th consecutive game. Their NBA best record goes to 49-13.
He just missed. A really fabulous effort. He was good in this game. Smart was good in this game. I thought there was one possession where he took a really stupid shot. It felt to me like the Celtics had control of the tempo. They had the ball. He had just scored on a couple of hoops near the bucket. You know, they were layups or effective layups, post-up plays. And they had plenty of time on the shot clock, and he decided to take a jumper over Chris Paul, and he missed. And I remember thinking, what are you doing? What are you doing? Like, it's just, there were a couple of those. There was one other one late in the game where, and it wasn't involving him. Kyrie Irving had a layup, and the bottle rattled in and out. And then they went down the other end. Houston did a made a three. And I thought that was a massive swing.
Yeah, I think they ended up going like on a 17-6 run after that.
Yeah, that was the Celtics would have gone up 8 at that point.
Oh, it was huge. It was such a huge thing. And Kyrie, it was a good shot. It just rattled in and out. And then right after that is when Rozier tried to put the ball on the floor after the rebound and turned it over.
Okay, Alan in Medway. Go ahead, Alan.
Hi, first time, long time. How you guys doing?
Good, Alan. What do you got?
Yeah, I want to talk about the Celtics game Saturday night. I want to make a statement before you cut my legs from underneath me. I just want you to listen to me and see if you guys agree.
Just
I blame that game on Stevens. I don't think he's a great coach. He doesn't match up the players that he should be playing at the time, especially at the end of the game. Moreau played a great game, and I don't understand why he didn't leave him in there instead of leaving Smart in there. Horford, I never liked the signing. I think he's overpaid $28 million. And Murray, I agree with you. I mean, the guy should be scoring 10 to 15 points a game, averaging 5 to 10 rebounds a game. He's most effective down on the box, getting the ball in the paint and hitting it off the glass. And occasionally he can jump out and he can hit the three-pointer. But that's Stevens' fault. Do you remember the game earlier in the year?
You gave us enough. Let's react to that. Stevens on Saturday night. My second guess would be the timeouts.
Yeah, that's about it.
You know, I never thought of Al Horford for Greg Monroe. Would you dial that back and stay with Monroe and keep Al Horford on the bench?
Well, I'll tell you what.
Isn't that the classic, like, you know, revisionist thinking?
Well, so it stuck out to me, though, in the game when it happened. It stuck out to me like, ooh, Monroe's going good here. And about halfway through, they took Monroe out, they put Horford in, and I get it. I get it. Horford's their guy. They're going to go with their better guy. But I'm telling you, in this matchup, it just felt to me like they could go inside and score pretty much whenever they wanted.
Okay, so there's a second guess. To me, the timeouts, and it's not the one I don't give Stevens a hard time for, is the most glaring one, which was Al Horford when he's rolling around on the floor. Stevens was trying to. He was trying to. A couple guys were trying to, and they just didn't get the timeout. I'm talking about right after the miss with the Rozier rebound. Okay, Rozier, as Maz just said, Rozier grabs the rebound, tries to put it on the floor. If Rozier immediately there is going timeout, you're sort of keeping the ball. You're not sort of keeping the ball. You're probably keeping the ball because the strip was a Tucker who got in there and stripped him when he tried to go to the floor. Huge turnover. And then Ariza hits the three. Still no timeout. Celtics come down the floor, and that's when Irving turned the ball over. Kyrie had a turnover on that very next possession. I think it was Ariza on the drive that gave Houston the lead for good. Somewhere in there, the Celtics were sitting with two timeouts.
Oh, you could feel it slipping away.
Right, so should Stevens have been there, you know, maybe after the Ariza make would be the best time right there to, you know, stop it, catch your breath, this game's starting to get a little hectic, and slow things down. That would be my second guess.
See, to me, it's when you turn it over. The one when the Horford one on the floor and the Rozier one, you got to have the ball there. Rozier made a cardinal, you know, he made a cardinal mistake. He gets a rebound and puts the ball down low, and all of a sudden this guy's hacking at him and the ball comes out. So to me, if a guard gets the ball there in traffic with people around him, and I don't care how good a rebounder Rozier is, if you're a little guy and you get the rebound down there and you get people on you, time out. Time out. What was there, a minute 10 left, minute 15 left in the game, something like that? You can't turn that ball over with a three-point lead. You get down the other end, you milk the shot clock, you make a couple of free throws, you're up 5 with 50 seconds to go. You've got it.
Yeah, the Celts, I'm surprised. They lost their composure more than the Rockets, who did as well.
Oh, it's just a massive mistake, and I think Rozier will learn from it. So that's the upside to it, but man, what a mistake.
I still think it proved who you are, though, over the course of the game. The only thing I'd say, you know, that's negative is that you're now, is it three behind Toronto in the loss column?
I haven't even checked.
I think you're either two or three behind Toronto in the loss column, and that's something to pay attention to.
Two.
Okay? Notice I'm not mentioning Cleveland, because Cleveland doesn't matter anymore, Murray. Done. Dunsky. Done like dinner. I told you last week, and then you go out and lose at home again to Denver. And it turns out it was chicken tortilla soup.
Yes, yeah, we got that news today. Chicken tortilla soup that J.R. Smith threw at the assistant coach. Yeah.
They're done. They're cashed, Maz. It's over.
No, they're not done yet.
Over.
No, you're wrong.
Trooper in the car on the Bruins. Hi, Trooper.
I know, Mike.
Good.
Hey, Mike, I've just noticed something. I mean, it's all season long, but it's particularly in, like, the last five games. And I hate to interrupt the love affair with Bruce Cassidy. I'm certainly not calling for Claude Julien, but how many too many men on the ice penalties is this team going to get? They've got three in the last five games. They lost a big game in December when they got two in one game, and the too many men on ice penalty in the overtime cost them the game. It is such a preventable penalty. It drives me crazy, and it's going to hurt you in the playoffs.
Okay, good job. Let's keep an eye on it. That's on Cassidy for sure.
And you know, some of them have resulted in power play goals on top of it. It happened in the Toronto game up there,
right,
where they got too many men, and they were giving up, you know, they weren't penalty killing well at the time either. Now, I don't know. Maybe you get some new guys here as a result of the deadline. Maybe there's some confusion there, and they clean it up. But, man, if you're pulling those in the postseason, those will bite you in the ass.
Long commercial-free segment is next here on a Reentry Monday. And what we're going to talk about is what I hope, what should be, but isn't, but what should be the return of heavyweight boxing to our lives. We'll do that right after this.
Michael Felger, Tony Maserati, Felger and Maz. You're listening to Felger and Maz.
Doesn't always have to be ha-ha-he-he.
Oh, love it.
98.5, the Sports Hub.
I don't know why the clock kept ticking away, but there it is. A minute left. Right uppercut, and it's over. Mamma mia, Deontay Wilder has done it.
He is the winner by way of technical knockout, and still the undefeated WBC heavyweight champion of the world, the Bronze Bomber, Deontay.
Is it dramatic and entertaining? Deontay Wilder, now 40-0.
I miss the days when boxing was important and we had big heavyweight fights and important heavyweight fights. I miss those days. I was always a consumer of those. I always bought them. I always watched them. I always made a point to be there late on Saturday night when Mike Tyson was fighting, or when I was a kid, Muhammad Ali was fighting, or, you know, I was in the generation where my father would take me to the closed circuit boxing matches. Remember those when you would be in a movie theater or some sort of hall, some sort of town hall or VFW, and they would have, whether it was a Sugar Ray Leonard fight or the Hagler fight or a Muhammad Ali fight, it would be closed circuit, and you'd watch those. So I miss the days when boxing mattered, and if you listen to this program, we try every now and then to go back to it. We went out to Mayweather Pacquiao and blah, 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 blah. So I'm trying to will the sport back a little bit, especially the heavyweights, because boxing needs heavyweights, I think. I'm one of those people who feel it begins and ends with the heavyweight division, and that's why I think boxing's fallen off, because there's been no heavyweight division in the last decade, really. Like, have the Klitschko's mattered to anyone anywhere?
No.
Here on this side of the ocean?
No.
Like, I think they killed the heavyweight division, and I think that's helped to kill boxing. So all we've gotten in the last decade is a stray Mayweather fight, which always sucks. Or I get pumped up like Canelo and, you know, Golovkin and these guys, and I watch it. I'm like, huh, no one really got hurt. No one went down. I can't even understand the guys after the fight. Like, doesn't do anything for me. Sorry. So, like, I'm not a boxing fan because I don't care about the sweet science and the technical parts.
No, you want to see a fight.
I'm a fight fan.
Of course.
There's a difference. So you can take your boxing and shove it. And your 147 division, 157 division, and trying to point guys and all that. The only fight that I've enjoyed from beginning to end in the last 5 years was the Fercacta-Mayweather fight. Mayweather-McGregor, I mean. The McGregor fight. Because that was a promotion and that was fun. And then when they fought. And I don't know, I sort of liked that one. So that shows you what kind of fight fan I am. But hey, it's better than nothing. And so, which brings me to the heavyweight division and Saturday night, Deontay Wilder. Folks, in case you don't know, there is an American fighter who has fought 40 times and has knocked out his opponent 39 of them. He is 40-0 with 39 knockouts. Mike Tyson didn't do that. Muhammad Ali didn't do that. Joe Frazier, no one's done that. He is the only heavyweight fighter in history to knock out 39 of his first 40 opponents, and he is 40-0. If you're watching on NBC Sports Boston, mwah, we can run the video, and we're showing it. On Saturday night, he knocked out Louis Ortiz, who was another undefeated heavyweight fighter, in an entertaining fight that I enjoyed the crap out of.
The last, like, five rounds of that fight were awesome. I mean, it started a little slow, but once it got going, man, it was dynamite.
See, this is what I need. What I need is two big guys in the ring who hurt each other, who actually go down, who actually get hurt. Louis Ortiz with on one knee spitting on the canvas after getting knocked out for the second time. And that's what I need to see. Deontay Wilder, I'm not sure he really knows how to box.
Oh, he doesn't. Are you kidding? He's a complete hack. He's totally gangly. He's all over the place. But I'll tell you, he's got power. There's no two ways about that. He can hit. And so, look, he's 6'7". He's all over the place. Oh, he's 30.
He's also in phenomenal shape.
Oh, he's in unbelievable shape. And he's late to the game, right? So he's 32. But again, 40, as you said, 40-0, 39 knockouts. And the one guy who went the distance with him fought him a second time and knocked him out in the first round. Okay, so this is that which is the source of his, you know, his bravado, which we'll get to in a minute. But this fight, he should have lost, if you want to know the truth.
Well, apparently he was up on all three cards. So this lends to your thing. You think this might have been a little bit of a fixed situation?
Yes, I think the fix was in on this fight. And I'll tell you why. Because in the seventh round, Ortiz got him. Ortiz popped him and put him down, and Wilder was in loopy land. We took a good look at him. He was completely out of it, and he was still out of it in the corner between rounds. He got lucky because he was able to hold on for the last 20 seconds or so of the round, if I remember. He went into the corner. He was still loopy. He came out for the eighth. He was still loopy, and Ortiz didn't go after him. How do you not go after a guy who's loopy after you put him on his ass at the end of the seventh?
So this is the stuff I love. Like, because guys are actually get hurt. And, is there a whiff of a fix? Fine. What do I care?
Because what boxing wants, because a lot of what you're saying to regard to the future of the sport is they all know it. They need a marquee heavyweight fight with guys that will make everyone go, whoa, I got to watch this one. And that fight is Wilder and Anthony Joshua, who is a Brit, who holds, I don't know, three or four of the other belts.
Undefeated.
Wilder's got one, and Joshua's undefeated, too.
There's an undefeated Brit. There's an undefeated American. The American's knocked out 39 of 40. Joshua's done something similar.
20 of 20.
Thank you. He's knocked out 20 of 20.
He's knocked out 20 of 20, and he fought Klitschko last April in a similar fight to this and got knocked down in the middle rounds. He took in fact, I was just watching it again to make sure I had the details right. He took a straight right to the chin and fell down, got up, and wasn't nearly as loopy as Wilder was, but came back and won the fight.
I shouldn't have to be telling you people these things because you should know them.
And I don't, and this is what's pissing me off. You guys put this in the email chain this morning. I'm like, what are you even talking about? I have bloodlust. I like violence. I would have liked to have watched this. I didn't even know it was happening. Why wasn't it promoted better? Why weren't we running spots? Why weren't we talking about it before? Why, like, I don't know anything about this.
So, listen, I think there are a lot of latent boxing fans out there like me. Sorry, fight fans who like the promotion and the hype and
all the pomp and circumstance that comes.
And
with,
a
right?
big match where someone could get his
head knocked off.
Head knocked off. What am I trying to say? And
knock his block off.
Knock his block off. Right. Someone could get their block knocked off.
I think.
I'm dying for it. And we have it. We have two undefeated fighters, one British, one American. They won't fight each other. So they're just circling each other. The American is, I don't think, a good technical boxer, but who cares?
He's not.
When he connects, he'll knock you into next week. He's got all sorts of, like, the way he talks. Now, again, this ain't Muhammad Ali, but after the fight, play cut one, he says he's Jesus, basically, the chosen one.
You know, a lot of people don't think that I can fight in the inside, but I had to surprise them and show them. My grandma told me a long time ago I was anointed by God, and it shows each and every time. Now I can say there's no man that stepped in the ring that I haven't put on their ass, baby.
The guy, like, why can't you sell that? Why isn't that guy more of a prominent? I've been anointed by God, and now there's no one who's climbing the ring with me who can say they haven't been put on their ass.
And he's the guy that comes into the ring all the time wearing the gold mask.
Yes, that's right.
We talked about this the last time. He comes in, you know, with a like, he's got his whole little entourage.
Yeah.
You know, and he's got a rapper with him and the whole nine yards. He's wearing his gold mask like he's going to a masquerade ball. And then he gets in there and he has no boxing skill whatsoever. Then that's a stretch. But, man, he is gangly. He comes at you from every direction, which is why they're all terrified of him. Because they don't know where it's coming from. He's hard to plan
for. This guy's a piece of work on top of it.
Now I can say there's no man that stepped in the ring that I haven't put on their ass, baby.
That's after he said he was anointed by God. My grandma told me I was anointed by God. All right. He does, Mazzo, you're right. He fights out here, and I'm like, he has these big roundhouses.
He clubs people.
And I don't know how you generate power out here And it feels like if he fought someone who knew how to box, to just get inside him and pop him right on the chin.
Which is why he should have lost his fight, because this other guy had a clue. He was just fat, which was part of his
he
problem.
He was a little heavy, and Wilder was supposed to fight this guy two previous times, but this guy failed two previous drug tests. To which I say, great, I don't care. I mean, this is part of the whole sort of, like, boxing should have, or, you know, in my whole life, it's always had this little whiff of...
scandal.
Scandal or...
shadiness.
Right, the whole thing, so great. And it's been so frustrating for me the last couple of years trying to get into fighting. And, like, you know we care because we went out to Vegas for Mayweather-Pacquiao. And no one gets hurt. No one gets hurt. No one goes down. No one comes close to going down. I don't want to go to the official scorecards. I want to see a big fella hit the deck. And when I watch these heavyweights, they do. And now there's this whole thing. So I think we're finally going to get Wilder and Joshua. Joshua's supposed to fight someone else out in the UK.
I believe his name is Joseph Parker. He's a Kiwi.
And then after that, Wilder should get the winner. And we're going to have what I think should be a real heavyweight championship fight with big interest, and someone's going to go down, someone's going to get hurt. We'll see if Wilder's just a fraud or not. He talked about this after the game, after the fight as well.
My goal is to unify, and I'm ready whenever those guys are. It seems like they ain't in no rush to fight me because I am the most dangerous man in the world. I am the most baddest man on the planet, and I prove that tonight. This solidify my top, this solidify my position at the top of the food chain, and soon there will be one champion, one face, one name, and he go by the name of Deontay Wilder.
I love the guy.
He's at the top of the food chain. Yeah, he's the great white of the boxing world.
It's like, authentic mountain gibberish, whatever. I don't care. I'm just entertained by it. I'm entertained by the lead-up. I'm entertained by the actual fight because someone gets hurt and someone goes down. Ortiz is on the canvas spitting out whatever. You know, and always in these heavyweight fights, too, it seems like the refs let it go longer than they would with the lower weight classes. You notice that?
Absolutely, because this fight would have been stopped earlier if they were smaller guys.
It should have been stopped on that earlier knockdown of Ortiz. He was done. He was out on his feet, and the ref lets it go. And, of course, 10 seconds later, he's totally out. And it's like, I thought that was the case in the last Wilder fight I watched as well, where the referee is just like, dude, this guy's out.
So you know what I don't get?
So I think they let it go longer in the heavyweight division. Whatever. It's a good product. There's no reason it's not bigger than it is.
I mean, the last five rounds, and again, I'm sure there's a replay available on demand or whatever. If you haven't watched it, watch the last five rounds in particular. They beat the bag out of each other. They do. And what I don't get is that Ortiz going into this fight was unbeaten.
Right.
He was 28-0.
Right.
Right? Wilder was 39-0. The two guys who were fighting overseas, Anthony Joshua is 20-0, and this guy Parker, again, who's a Kiwi, he's from New Zealand, is 26-0, 28-0, something like that. How are all these guys unbeaten? And why haven't they fought each other yet?
No, but I'm fine with that part of it. Keep their undefeated record and get the hype going. How come we haven't heard of any of them? What if this were 15 years ago and Tyson, Lennox Lewis, Evander Holyfield, I don't know, whoever the guys were in the division at the time, were 26-0, 28-0, 20-0, 40-0 with 39 knockouts, it would be phenomenal. It'd be a phenomenal division. They'd get to fight each other. There'd be promotions. It'd be a big deal, and we get to put that on our sports calendar. And I just think it's a disgrace, a borderline disgrace that you have these fighters now. And Ortiz ain't no, you know, that ain't an all-timer. He was 28-0 and was representative. Like, people should know about this, and it should be promoted. I just don't get why it's not bigger.
The fight that boxing wants is Joshua and Wilder. That's the one they want, which is why I wouldn't surprise me if the next one is fixed, too.
Fix it! Whatever it takes, give me that. Put it in Vegas. Felger and Maz will go out, and, you know, all good.
This is Felger and Maz on 98.5, the Sports Hub.